Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the Opel Commercial Vehicles range. We have your van.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It is a fact that most women spend more than a third of their lives post-menopause, with the average age of menopause being 51. And new research tells us that almost 40% of women who've gone through it or are going through it keep it entirely to themselves, and they don't talk about the symptoms, which can be quite severe. They don't talk about it, 40% of women, with anyone. Well, I'm joined by GP and women's health expert Dr. Deirdre Lundy for more now. Good morning, Deirdre.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for joining us. I said before the break that we were stunned by the response, but I'm not really when I see that 40% of women just don't talk about it, and it means that people have a lot of bottled up questions.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised at all. Like, you know, since I started to work more heavily in this area, the demand, I just can't meet the demand, which is heartbreaking. So I've kind of turned my attention to try to improve the offer of care through general practice so that I don't have to do it entirely by myself.
You're trying to teach GPs to deal with women and talk to women about the symptoms they're coping with.
Exactly.
And tell me about those symptoms. Is it fair to say that the vast majority of them, and we'll talk about them in more detail when I come to those questions, but most of them are treatable, would you say?
Oh, completely. I mean, the physiology of it is this, that as you age, your ovaries start to fail and decline. And initially what happens is all the variety of reproductive hormones that they're in charge of producing start to come out in a disorganized way. So that's the beginning of the menopause. We call that the perimenopause. And those symptoms usually start while you're still having regular monthly periods. There's a lot of confusion about that. People think, oh, you can't be in the menopause if you're still getting bleeds every month. That's not true at all.
Is that the perimenopause, Deirdre?
Yes. And then gradually over time, what will happen is the bleeds will get shorter together and then eventually peter out completely. But the symptoms don't stop. If anything, they sometimes intensify. And most women are looking between 7 and 12 years of quite life-impacting symptoms.
Okay. And is it most women who will suffer quite badly, or do many women find it a very manageable process?
I'm sure there are many women, probably the majority of women, who just muddle through and cope quite well on their own. But I don't meet them. I meet the hordes of people whose lives have been turned upside down. And they're really the people on whom I want to concentrate, because there's no need for that. If you're suffering symptoms as a result of a hormone, an incomplete hormone delivery problem, well, then you just fix the hormones and the symptoms go away. It's actually really easy.
Okay, well, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But in terms of symptoms, there is a huge list of 150 symptoms, which is quite frightening. But can you bring us the most common ones?
Sure. So we usually divide them up into physical and emotional, although there's a lot of crossover between those two categories, because you can imagine if you have lots of physical symptoms, you're going to get emotional symptoms. But the classic physical things would be loss of control of your core body temperature. So you get these flushes and waves of heat and sweating. And then as quickly as you get hot, you get cold again as the sweat wicks off of you, which are very unpleasant during the day, but horrendous at night because they destroy your sleep pattern. No REM sleep is possible, and that can go on for years. Other physical symptoms would be a lot of collagen decline. So you lose vaginal elasticity and lubrication. The joints become uncomfortable. The bladder becomes less controllable, things like that. And then with the mood, which is sometimes the saddest thing, irritability, anxiety, brain fog, cognitive decline are so common, memory loss, not being able to perform at work. Like, it really undermines confidence, loss of libido.
The symptom you talk about, the rage, the mood changes, they can have very serious implications for relationships with significant others and with children and colleagues and so on.
Can they wash? I mean, there are a lot of people who've lost relationships or have had to move on from employment because, you know, there was something wrong, but then nobody could put their finger on what it was. And then not uncommonly, if you go to healthcare, understandably, on one level, the answer would be to put you on some kind of depression drug, thinking, okay, well, there's something obviously wrong with the way your mood is going, but it actually is a very common symptom of the perimenopause.
Where do you stand on hormone replacement treatment? You referenced it there before, so I'm gleaning that you're in favor, Deirdre.
I'm a prescriber and a 17-year user.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. No, I have no hesitation. You know, if I really do believe that if there was a male hormone deficiency syndrome that impacted that half of the species to the degree that menopause affected us, there wouldn't be a man out there that wasn't on hormones.
Okay, because there are some people who will not take them, will not use them, will not prescribe them. They're worried and scared about them. So how do you allay those fears or address them?
Well, the main reason that concern arises among women, I think, is because we know that certain types of reproductive cancers, particularly ovary and breast, can have hormone receptors on them. And sometimes in the presence of extra hormones, like say if you are pregnant or on the pill, there can be a sort of an encouragement there for the tumor tissue to grow in the presence of hormone. And a study was published about 20 years ago that linked the use of HRT, hormone replacement therapy, for menopause and breast cancer. And it was in all the headlines of all the papers, and it really did destroy the confidence in the product for decades. When you actually looked at the study, most of us who were prescribers back then said, well, this is utter nonsense. It tells us that if you don't use HRT, your risk of having a breast cancer diagnosed in your 50s is 23 in 1,000. If you do use HRT for at least 5 or more years, it goes to 27 in 1,000. But for that same group of women, if they're overweight, it's already in the high 40s. And if they drink more than a big glass of wine every night, there's 28 in effect. Like, it's worse. Mm-hmm. Drinking and being overweight have a bigger impact on breast cancer, the potential of being diagnosed with breast cancer, than giving your quality of life back with hormones. Like, I would much rather forego the drink than forego the hormones.
Okay. And do you? Is that how you balance it?
Yeah. Well, you don't have to. I mean, of course, you can drink and use HRT, but what I'm saying is,
yeah, you can do what you like, but you're going to elevate your risks of certain things happening. Can I talk to you about vaginal health? Because many women complain of experiencing dryness when menopause sets in, but nobody seems to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's us. I think Irish, my generation and older possibly, are a little reticent. I mean, like my younger, I do a lot of sexual reproductive health, and I find the younger ladies that come in are far more forthcoming in general. Obviously, there's exceptions, but, you know, it's not an Irish lady thing to come in and demand improvement in her vaginal health quality, whereas, you know, on the continent, I would say it's not an uncommon. French women and Italian women are famous for demanding, you know, maintenance of vaginal health. So shyness definitely is one of it. And then, you know, also you're not too sure how you're going to be received when you bring this up. You won't know necessarily whether you'll get a stare or, of course, I know lots about that. Let me help you.
Well, can you give those women who have not spoken about this and who are dealing with it themselves some advice? It would be really helpful.
Sure. So a couple of things happen in your vagina as you get into the perimenopause and then beyond into the full menopause. So the blood vessels that supply oxygen to the tissues become narrow, smaller, and tortuous. So it's very hard. Like, even a woman on HRT could still have vaginal problems. So you need to do something locally, like in the vagina, to get vagina relief. So we usually start with simple stuff, and there's an entire range, an industry of like agar-based moisturizers and lubricants that just give you comfort and relief. Just like you'd moisturize your skin at night, you moisturize your vagina at night. And then probably the real kind of gold standard for giving you back your vaginal health is to put estrogen into the vagina. And there's loads of, sadly, prescribable only. You know, you got to get a prescription for them, but we have lots of pessaries and ointments and gels and things that you can apply directly to the vagina. The sad thing, though, is if you need them, you need to use products indefinitely. Because the other menopause symptoms get better, but the vagina symptoms never go away.
What about women who may not be comfortable having that conversation with their own GP? Are there other options out there for them for advice?
Yeah, loads. So there's so much good information online these days. Menopause is really buzzing at the moment. The last 2 years, I guess, I've seen it all over the UK media. And obviously that's had a trickle down for us as well. So things like, you know, the Women's Health Concern and My Menopause Doctor and all these amazing websites have a wealth of really reliable information. And it's not unusual for a lady to come and see me or talk to me on the phone And she's already done all her research through those reputable websites. So that's number one.
Okay.
And then the other thing, I mean, your own GP might be really highly skilled, and I don't mean to discredit GPs at all. I mean, my colleagues who do menopause care don't want me to come on here and give out about them. But, you know, general practice is really under pressure at the moment. We've been grossly defunded. The time we have for consultations has gone down, down, down. So, you know, this is a nuanced kind of a consult. You need a lot of time. So I think it would be important to make sure you're able to book that time if you are going to have a menopause conversation. And then the other thing is maybe talk to a well woman center or a family planning clinic doctor about it, because every one of those organizations would have senior personnel with excellent menopause and HRT skills.
Okay. Well, we have some women texting us saying they went through menopause with absolutely no problems and no symptoms, and that's great. It's not the same for everybody, and we have a lot of messages here, Deirdre, from people who do have problems, and I'm going to do a rapid fire with you now and try and get through as many as we can. Can you please ask Dr. Lundy about alleviating symptoms without HRT? I cannot take it, as I previously had breast cancer.
Okay, well, first of all, in general, she's absolutely right. We generally avoid HRT after breast cancer, but not always. And in fact, in 2021, we're hoping to start a clinic in Hollis Street, the Masher and Vincent's, looking at possibly offering hormone replacement for women who've had certain types of breast cancer diagnosis, among other things. So that's not an absolute deal breaker, but there's lots of things that you can try in the meantime. So it depends on the symptoms, though. See, HRT will get rid of all the symptoms for the most part. So with women who can't take HRT, we have to treat symptom by symptom. So for the mood disorder, and sometimes for the flushes and sweats, we often offer these drugs, SSRIs, selective serotonin release inhibitors, reuptake inhibitors, I should say. So these are drugs like Prozac, Lustral, venlafaxine. All these kind of mood drugs have not only been shown to be useful for mood, but also for flushes and sweats. Sometimes we use cognitive behavioral therapy. That really helps, apparently, with flushes and sweats and mood, which is amazing. Acupuncture to a certain extent. There's some research being done in an overactive bladder medicine called oxybutynin that seems to reduce the severity and frequency of flushes and sweats. Now, it's not licensed, but it's being trialed in breast cancer survivors at the moment. So there's lots and lots of little sneaky ways that we can cherry pick some of the more rotten symptoms and try to alleviate them without HRT.
Okay. I'm in full menopause, says this listener. For the last 2 years, I've put on 2 stone. I watch what I eat. Mm-hmm. I exercise. I drink water, but still I can't lose weight. I don't want to take HRT. Yeah. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
That's a really good thing to bring up. So HRT is not going to change that. So don't bother. Don't worry about it. Menopausal weight gain is classic and almost unavoidable because your metabolism shifts. So it's not that you're not doing things right. It's that your body has changed and it is trying to hoard fat, thinking that you're ready to die soon. You know, like, so.
That's really cheery. Yeah, thanks, Deirdre.
You know, and it's so true. Anthropologically, it's very rare in other species for females to live beyond reproductive ability. We're the only, well, us and a couple of whale species, I think, live beyond reproduction. So, like, there's something in the metabolism that just says you need to hoard fat because you don't know when the bad day is going to come. And you can't change that with HRT, by the way. That's not going to help at all.
Okay.
So, sadly,
are you saying there's nothing you can do?
No. You got to adjust your diet. You got to eat less and exercise more. It absolutely stinks. Yeah.
Anne says, if waking during the night, are you better off getting up and doing something, or should one remain awake in bed and try to sleep? That's a perennial problem.
I don't know that. Well, certainly there's no science on that. Like, this is a personal, there's no data to say do this, do that. Certainly during when my flushes were at their worst, I just lay there, you know, took my nightdress off, toweled myself down, waited for 5 or 10 minutes till I started shaking, and then put the covers back on. But I wouldn't get up. I think that really disturbs your sleep. Even I would probably have to pee at that point, but then who doesn't?
Okay.
But, you know, I don't think there's any science as to which is better. I think you need to talk to somebody.
You
need to get your sleep back.
And try and just figure out what works for you, really. I mean, some people might find that getting up, having a walk around and a drink of water helps and it mightn't help somebody else. Yeah. So it's a personal thing.
Yeah.
Will you ask the doctor, please, how many years flushes should last? I've gone back on HRT at 59 because the flushes have worsened and I entered the menopause at 54. So that's 5 years on.
Yeah, because that research from 20 years ago suggested that the connection, as tiny as it was, between the use of hormones and breast cancer only kicked in at 55. A lot of doctors and patients got it in their head that they would use HRT for 4, 5, 6 years and then come off at 55. And that is way too soon for most people. So it's not uncommon to have flushes and sweats deep into your early to mid 60s and longer. So they've now found that women whose flushes and sweats persist deeper into the 60s and beyond, especially if they're obese, especially if they're smoking, it can actually be a red flag for cardiovascular disease. And while you're on HRT, it gives you cardiovascular disease protection. And when you come off, you lose that. So we would actually encourage those women to get back on their hormones and stay on them for as long as they possibly can.
Okay, this next woman is having a terrible time. Going on 52, my periods have been strange to say the least. I'm currently on day 15 of a period. I'm absolutely worn out. Is there anything that can be done? And her GP has said that she's in perimenopause.
Yeah, but even if she is in perimenopause, 15 days of a bleed is going to tear you down. Like, something needs to be done about that. So she needs maybe to get some investigations to make sure that there isn't a structural phenomenon like a fibroid or a polyp causing her to bleed so much. Check that she isn't anemic and then go on some kind of a medication or get a Mirena or do something that's going to subdue that excessive bleeding. Because excessive bleeding is another huge problem that women sometimes minimize and can have a huge impact on their quality of health. But irregular prolonged bleeding is actually linked to the perimenopause. HRT might help with that, but it wouldn't necessarily, like, especially if there's a big old fibroid in there. So you'd have to attack that on two levels. You'd have to look at the causes for the extended bleeding as well as concern about the
hormones. She needs to go back to her GP and ask for a referral.
Well, definitely an ultrasound at the very least. You know, some basic investigations, iron, like a hemoglobin test, you know, just to see how bad is bad. Like,
I would love if Claire would ask them about to do that, about us women who are on hormone blockers due to cancer diagnosis.
Yeah. So that's one of the groups that suffers the worst, because these are women who have been diagnosed with hormone sensitive tumors. And the oncologist's way of suppressing the growth of the tumor is to block the effect of the hormones, not just to the tumor cells, though, but to every tissue in the body. And while these are very effective at preventing cancer spread and growth, they can have a devastating toll on the rest of your health. So things like womb lining cancers are more common in those women. Cardiovascular disease and osteoporosis more common in those women. So they really need a kind of a comprehensive joined up thinking. There was work being done at trying to give low dose estrogen with the blockers that was tissue specific, so that avoids the breast but looks after the bone and the heart vessels. But at the moment, the answer is you need to talk to your oncology team about that. That's very nuanced. That's a very specialist area.
Mary says that listening to Dr. Lundy say that us women and a couple of whales live past child-rearing years. Well, I certainly feel like a whale since this perimenopausal stage commenced. Thanks, Mary.
I know. It's miserable.
Oh, gosh. Another listener says, I'm going through the menopause right now and it is horrendous. It's easily the worst time in my life. And you're saying today very clearly, Deirdre, that it shouldn't be and it needn't be.
No. I mean, I know that most women listening in wouldn't have the same ease and comfort around the use of hormones as I do, because that's obviously my area of expertise. And I'm a personal user as well. You know, I was 42 and my periods, which was very unusual, they just stopped abruptly. And oh my God, at first I didn't know what was wrong with me, even though I was actually doing menopause care at the time. You never can shine that light on yourself, you know? And I went through hell and looked for all sorts of other explanations. And it was only when I actually decided, you know, I might be menopausal and I put myself on HRT, I was like, oh, for the love of Christ.
A busman's holiday. This person wants to know, what about pimples and acne around the mouth? I'm 55, it's going on for 2 or 3 years now, and she has scarring, perimenopausal at 40.
Ooh, That's odd now. That's a kind of an odd one. So generally acne is, if it's attributable to anything hormonal, it's attributable to an imbalance between the male and female hormone in our blood. So our ovaries make three different types of estrogen, one type of progestogen, but it actually makes four different types of male hormone. And you tend to see acne more in people who are going through testosterone. You know, the estrogen goes down, but the testosterone says high. So that could be something else entirely. That's a skin thing. I think well, obviously talk to your GP first, but I definitely want to maybe find out if there's some kind of other explanation for that adult acne. Okay. It wouldn't be classic of the menopause. Let's put it that way.
It's not a common symptom. Another listener is still getting hot flushes at 70. Is that normal?
Yeah. And again, I don't know. Now, God, I don't want to put any kind of fear on anybody ringing in, but there is this link between prolonged persistent hot flushes and, you know, a vulnerability in the cardiovascular system. So probably no harm to go back to speak to the GP, get some baseline investigations. It's too late, sadly, for someone in their 70s to initiate hormones. The problem with introducing estrogen late in life is that if there is blockage in the coronary vessel system, you can actually crack little bits of it off when you put estrogen in too late in life. We call it this therapeutic window, that if women are started on estrogen before their, say, early 60s, it actually protects and preserves the health of their heart and blood vessels. If you introduce it late when there's already established disease, it can precipitate an event. So she wouldn't be HRT would not be available to that woman. We need to talk to her.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can't really advise her.
She'd need to have a cardiac check. That's what you're saying.
I would do that. Okay. I would certainly do that anyway. And then maybe speak to a GP who has a good understanding of menopause and flushes and stuff as well.
Okay. Yeah. This woman is 40 and 2 years into perimenopause and would like us to say that this can happen if you're quite young and not always into your 50s.
Oh, yeah.
And this person is finding a huge emotional toll with it too.
Oh, God, love her. And I know what that feels like. So when you said at the start of the piece, the average age of the menopause is 51, what they mean by that word is, when they say that, what that sentence means is the average age for a woman to have her last ever period is 51. Because that's actually what menopause means, menopause, end of menstruation. But what we're talking about when we use the word menopause, and we're probably using it incorrectly, is the collection of symptoms and the disruption to your quality of life. And that can start decades before your last period. If it starts under 45, we consider that to be premature, you know, early menopause, and it has a greater potential for health impact as you get older. And anybody who's under 40, when they start losing their periods, is high risk for bone and heart disease as they go forward, and absolutely does. For them, using hormones is less of an option and it's more mandated because, like, I have patients, we have a premature ovarian loss, hormone loss clinic in Hollis Street, and we have women in their late teens, 20s, who are diagnosed full menopause. And for them not to take hormone would be unconscionable. They have to be on hormones. It would be so dangerous for them not to. So, yeah, I think younger women tend to suffer more too.
Well, look, like I said, we had so many questions in for you, Dr. Lundy. I'm delighted that we spoke to you today and thank you so much for answering as many of them as you did. It's World Menopause Day coming up. Is that at the weekend?
Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. So people can find more information if they just do a quick search. As you say, Google Doctor or Dr. Google is actually quite good on this one if you go to reputable sites.
It really is. Yeah. And then people who are not like hormone jockeys like me, who just want to know what they can do without hormones to maintain. There's a lady called the Wellness Warrior. You know, there's a lot of good websites for people who want information on hormones and people who want information on how to avoid them but still muddle through.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. It was an absolute pleasure. That's Dr. Deirdre Lundy.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.